Hey everybody, and welcome to Back Issues, the only podcast sustained entirely on recycled Kevin Smith jokes. I'm your host, Jason.
Snoochie boochies, bitches.
He loves the cock.
Oh Lord. I'm your host, Jason. With me tonight's Dick.
Hey.
Daryl.
Yo.
And Jamie. Who doesn't want to make any noise. Tonight's tonight's subject's one that's actually very near and dear to me, so much so that I got my first tattoo of this property, and that's Transmetropolitan. Started in 1997 and ended in 2002. Creative team of Warren Ellis writing and Derek Robertson doing the art. We got 60 issues. Let's start off with the basics. This is at some unknown point, apparently in the 23rd century, in a city that is big enough to be its own voting block. That is an unknown location in the U.S. And society has reached a point of technological reliance that really we're seeing the starts of in our society now. These are people who can't live without, you know, their makers, which are kind of like the food replicators in Star Trek, but a little bit cooler. And they're, you know, spoon-fed their information through holographic TVs, and it's kind of like, what if we had Star Trek technology, but at the same time we were still a bunch of consumerist pigs? And
it's kind of like Max Headroom, right?
A bit, yeah.
You're implying that the Federation wouldn't allow people back on Earth. Well, anyway, that's Star Trek's talk.
Yeah, that's a completely different look at this subject.
The main character of Transmet is Spider Jerusalem, who is an obvious analog to Hunter S. Thompson. Same, you know, everything.
Yeah,
Spider is Hunter with sci-fi drugs.
He's literally, like, pretty much the embodiment of that whole archetype, the whole gonzo, as it were. Yeah. It's very interesting, and I that's one of the aspects I really like about this story.
And, it all concerns Spider and his group, his assistants, his editor, and all that, dealing with a lot of political intrigue. This is a very politically minded story. I mean, Spider's big mission is to take down a president.
Right. In Spider, you have a character who is a bastard, and yet he's got, you know, like, hardcore journalistic integrity and shit. He's a cool guy.
I mean, his methods are very unsound. He's very unsound, period. But at the same time, he's the only person with, you know, integrity in the city.
I think it's put best in one of the first few issues. These strippers all keep referring to him as Fuckhead, and that's a perfect descriptor of him.
Trust the Fuckhead.
Trust the Fuckhead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a hard-drinking, hard-drugging fucking curmudgeon of a son of a bitch, but when it comes to, you know, doing what's right, you know, he wears his ethics on his sleeve. He's a really interesting character.
He forgot hard-headed and hard-ass.
Yeah, yeah. He's a bastard.
Well, let's be honest. There is nothing about Spider that isn't hard. Considering there are entire storylines that revolve around his dick.
Certainly not anything that's about him that's subtle either.
Oh, no. He's as subtle as a baseball bat to the side of the head. But at the same time, he's the motherfucker you want on your side in a fight, you know? And not just because he carries a bowel disruptor.
Yeah. Best weapon ever.
That is literally the best weapon in a comic book ever. Oh, my God.
A gun that can make you shit yourself unto prolapse.
Yes. Yeah. Which he uses.
Very flagrantly.
Yep.
You're full of shit, shoots him with the fucking bowel disruptor.
Now, Dick, specifically with you and Daryl, I want you guys to read this for one big reason. look how it applies to what we're dealing with now.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's spooky. It's very spooky. Daryl, if you want to take this first, though.
Oh, no, I was just going to say it really does kind of speak to the current journalistic climate where we're fed news that, you know, the
sanitized for your protection.
Yeah, and it's just shit. It's all propaganda and shit. It's
or mindless entertainment and shit.
Right. It's meant to tell us what we want to hear and you know, make us good consumers and shit and, well, you know, and
honestly, that comes from an older book that would be Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, where society didn't fall due to government intervention, like in 1984. Society fell due to an overstimulation.
Oh, shit.
Basically, they'd sit around and watch TV and their lives would fall apart and they'd take Soma and the world just collapses. That's the kind of world we're looking at here, where everybody's an information junkie of one sort or another.
Right. And only of the sort that kind of, you know, confirms their biases and, you know, lets them live safely without, you know, fear or doubt, you know, and you know, it's that's kind of the world in Transmit where, you know, everything is hyper-advertising and, you know, and you know, propaganda and just, you know, Spider is one of the few journalists, you know, or one of, well, really kind of presented as one of the only in the context of the story who actually, you know, gives a fuck about societal issues and you know, strives to you know, bring the truth to the forefront, you know, no matter what the cost.
Well, Spider says it himself. Society's gotten so stupid that they assume that if someone's digging into somebody, they've just checked press releases that have come out. They don't bother to try and hide damning information anymore because people are so wrapped up in their own shit that they don't look at the world around them or anything. They're too busy chasing their pleasures.
And to add to that, Dick, you know, the Transmit Society is one that is kind of forgotten, you know, even something essential as like where they are in time, and they refer to you know, things by dates of like celebrity deaths and stuff.
Yeah, all time is measured in relation to the biggest event.
Right, right. So you know, these are people that have lost their way in a big way, and you know, the media in the context of the story feeds into that in a pretty big way, and. You know, here comes Spider, you know. And it's,
he's just gonna fuck shit up, pretty much, because people deserve to know the truth. What I think really interesting is another sort of symptom of the entire timeline, the whole time period, is look at the president before you have the election that happens, the major story arc in this. Fucking the president clearly states, you know, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but he says, as long as 51% of people have food and are alive and have somewhere to fuck and they don't have to deal with their problems, I've done my job.
Yep,
right.
A hard job.
And he is somebody who wants to be president for the sole purpose of fucking with people, just to hurt people and
now,
shit. So
there's a lot of analogs in this story to real life events. Jamie brought up before we started recording analogs of JFK and Nixon era, specifically with the college campus shooting that happens towards the end of the book. You know, obviously parallels to Kent State.
Yeah, it's really interesting to look at all these events being replayed out, and it's kind of a look at this sort of theme that permeates all of literature and just to, you know, modern thinking in general. It's that if you don't take a look at history, if you don't respect history, you're doomed to repeat it. And since everything has this eerie parallel to that time period, it's kind of, you know, this sort of interesting look at that. It is an interesting look at that as not only a literary device, but sort of as a warning. In a way, it says, you know, don't, you know, let it go off the deep end, guys. We're already on the way there. And I mean, this started in 1997. Like, you know, people have been warning us for a long time that this is going to happen. And if you look now, I mean, there's a resurgence of 80s music being remixed as vaporwave. And if you look at our current political candidates, you have the exact same situation as is presented in Transmetro. You have the candidate everybody loves but is a horrible person, and then you have the person who everybody thinks is a horrible person, but at least he stands up for something and has values and, you know, some sort of a thing. Not that I'm injecting any sort of political bias into this. We here at Back Issues do not pick any specific sort of a candidate or anything. Quite frankly, we probably all think they're pretty stupid.
Our domain is not politics, it's comic books.
Exactly. But regardless, it's just really interesting looking at how history has repeated itself so many times over and over again, and how this is sort of a cautionary tale of not only the dangers of technology, but forgetting who you are and what's happened and where you're going.
Now, Jamie, I got a pick on you.
Okay.
And I'm going to be waltzing through a fucking verbal minefield while I do it, so if I offend you, please forgive me.
I'm hard to offend, but go ahead.
The first storyline.
Right.
Dealing with the transhumanists.
Yeah.
Obvious parallel.
Obvious parallel, yes.
I mean, just straight up, you could not say it any simpler than it is, you know, gender dysphoria.
Yeah.
People who don't feel at home in their bodies for one reason or another.
Well, let's be honest, transhumanism is coming. It's coming.
Oh, yeah.
That's the next step, I think. My mother thinks it's going to be multiple marriages, you know.
Nah.
No, it's going to be transhumanism.
It's going to be the day where we can hack off our limbs and replace them at will because we can.
Mm-hmm.
Or you don't have to hack them off. You'll just have to unplug them and then install the new firmware.
But, yeah. You know, I read a lot of that as being trend setting, too. You know, there was a lot of dysphoria there amongst the people, you know, and whatnot, but there were just as many that did it just because it was cool to
do.
Well, you know?
That's kind of what's happening in with transgenders right now. Is there are people like me who are most certainly going through a definite gender dysphoria, and that really is what you need to define transgenderism. But there are so many people out there who are just doing it because it's trendy. And that's, you know, I don't want to say I'm offended by it, but I think it's unhealthy to act that way. That's just my personal opinion.
Right.
But,
that said, if I could splice myself with alien DNA, I probably would.
I'm sure you would.
But only because it gave you three penises.
No, only because why not? I mean, they've shown in Transmetropolitan they can regress transients.
Mm-hmm.
They did it to the one hooker.
Well, yeah, it is the question of if it's available, you know, and it's free and easy and reversible, and what's the harm, you know?
Why not spend a week as an alien?
Right.
And why not have extra arms or legs attached to yourselves? Or extra eyes or something like that, you know?
Have literal eyes in the back of my head?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is kind of an intriguing thing, actually, you know, like I gotta wonder if the capability was there, would I?
Yeah, I wonder. This actually, I probably would.
Oh yeah,
you know, if I knew if it was something like was normal and every day, I'd probably do it. You know, but you know, we're not living in that time yet.
Right.
But like with the allegories and illusions and other such, you do see real-world problems being reflected through this sci-fi lens.
Yeah, it's a very, very hands-off way to approach social commentary without pissing anybody off, because it's a comic book! And I love that. Right. I love how they literally, like, Spider and by extension, the, can't remember who the writer is, I'm horrible with names.
Warren Ellis.
Warren Ellis almost self-inserts as Spider in a way. And it's not the direct self-insert Mary Sue sort of kind of way, but it's more of a, this is how I see the world right now. And I can't tell you guys these things directly because it's going to piss off a lot of people, and I can't do that. So rather than tell you directly, I will put all of this information out there in front of you and wrap it up in, you know, brightly colored panels and well-done inking. By the way, the art is fucking amazing. Oh, my God.
Well, I think I would have to say as a writer, you know, I haven't write a whole lot of things, but I think anything you write really has to be through your own perspective. Even if you're viewing it through somebody else, you're going to still put your own spin on it, because you can't truly be that other person. And so you got to look at the world you're creating or the world you're viewing and transferring into your work through your own eyes. There's just no way around it. There's just no.
Yeah,
I agree.
Definitely.
What's really interesting about the whole thing, though, is that it's this Gonzo style journalism. Is this like some sort of like step above Gonzo journalism? Gonzo comic books? Like, have we gotten there?
Well, I'd have to say that Gonzo journalism is dead in this day and age.
Yeah,
and I think for reasons we already discussed, it's called, you know, when that kind of thing is done, it's now called ambush journalism. And it's frowned upon in the mainstream media because, let's be honest, the mainstream media is, you know, it's working on behalf of the telecom industry and the greater corporate structure as a whole. And that feeds into the government. Right. And it's not, you know, journalists like Hunter S. Thompson, they don't exist anymore. They really don't. Right.
And those of us who always wind up sorely disappointed in ourselves.
Right. You know what I find fascinating about this book, though, is it is as much an indictment of the media as it stood when it was written as anything else, you know? It took the issues, you know, that have only become, you know, even more widespread today and skewered them in a way that wasn't heavy-handed, you know? And I love that, you know? It was a really savvy take on the media's problems.
You guys remember
that issue where Spider forces himself to watch television for like a day?
Yeah.
And
that's
and how,
why I no longer know, it, I no longer watch TV because I did something like that once.
Right. And it scarred him.
Oh yeah, it deeply traumatizes you.
It does. Yeah. I mean, after I had a house fire about 5 years ago, and when we first moved into the hotel afterwards, that's all I had to do was watch TV, and it's depressing. It's agonizing. It's not fun.
Right. And, you know, I still think there are programs that are great, but I don't watch them live anymore. You know,
right.
I can't sit through the endless, you know, intellectually insulting commercials and shit like that. You know, the ones that, you know, I mean, I'm talking about commercials that literally insult you for being a consumer, you know, shit like that, you know,
well,
I just...
Advertisement always talks down to the consumer because it treats them like a child that absolutely needs the product they're selling.
Right.
And sadly, that works on a lot of people, unfortunately.
Right.
It's you know, I've always avoided television ever since, you know, I was 16 because it's just been shit. It's just shit that gets funneled into your face hour after hour, day after day. You know, stupid looks at how society should be according to the television or something that's supposed to be a lambasting of a way that people live their life and stuff. And it's all just stupid, inane shit. And advertising all treats you like a bunch of idiots. And it's just really just, it's disgusting and disturbing what they think they can get away with showing you on the screen that you put in your house, you know?
Yep. And at the risk of sounding like an old person, I feel like there was a lot less of that before.
Oh, there maybe, you're right.
But, well, I'm trying to think to myself, what is that the case? I mean, you know, back in the 80s, we had, we didn't exactly have daring TV, but, you know, I feel like, you know, a lot of the shows didn't try to insult the intelligence of the viewer too much. I mean, you know, I'm thinking right now, you know, I think about the A-Team, and the A-Team's a really silly example because it's not true that nobody ever died on that show, but it was a rare occurrence, and it generally wasn't due to gunfire. But the premise of bullets never hitting anyone was so silly that it just kind of, you know, flew out the window. That's what you got a lot of in 80s TVs. We're not going to be violent, but we're going to try to portray it anyway, just for the hell of it. And it's going to come off a little soft boil, but you'll be so able to notice it that you won't care. Whereas now, I feel like, you know, everything is, you know, it's always been consumer-driven. But now I feel like it's so consumer-driven that nothing else matters. And I'm not saying it's driven by the consumer. I'm saying it's driven by people who want the consumer dollar. And rather than put their product on display, and you know, for the consumer to make their own decision, it really just feels like the best that what they try to do is. I know there's a lot of talk in psychological circles about advertising and it being like a form of brainwash. And I don't know, it just seems like that's more prevalent today than it was before. But I'm not saying it wasn't prevalent back then. It was certainly there.
Sure.
It just was, you know, it was just more obvious. Back. It was more obvious and a little, a lot less cynical.
Right. I remember when advertising used to, you go out of its way to be clever and witty and entertaining in its own right, you know, and mm-hmm. And nowadays it's intellectually insulting, it's stupid, it's just, yeah. No, I fully agree with you. Having grown up in that time period, you know, I find myself, you know, thinking the same thing quite often.
And you know what really where I really see this the most often is, you know how the Super Bowl used to be one of the things people look forward to was watching the commercials at the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Have you noticed that the commercials have gotten really crappy at the Super Bowl the last couple of years?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they don't even try.
Well, they don't, because they know everybody's already going to be watching for the commercials, so why bother putting effort into mm-hmm. them anymore? And what's really funny is that kind of, you know, sort of subverts the whole idea of having the Super Bowl being such a big advertisement, you know.
Yeah. Well,
right.
Yeah. Well, it certainly explains why they get, like, Katy Perry as the halftime show.
Well, we're getting into some little bit of a dark territory.
Right.
I think it's worth mentioning there's another theme in Transmet that really trumps how the indictment of modern society. And that's that through the truth, we'll be led to something better. Through, you know, empirical truth. Not some spiritual higher calling, but through the facts. We'll have better politics.
Is that the case, really?
Well,
that's why Spider fights, though. Because he cares and wants that for people.
Right, but he also kind of faces a tough time getting people on board with it, you know? I mean, because they're so inured to the shittiness of media and, you know, and mass consumerism, you know, and just decadence that, you know, I think that is one of kind of the unstated battles that he faces.
But he does triumph in that, because, I mean, look at it this way. At the beginning, he's a myth, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He's somebody that was known to have burned out and escaped.
Yeah.
He had written himself to death, pretty much. Career-wise.
Right, wasn't he in retirement at the beginning of the
year? Yeah. When he comes out of retirement, he does start getting people to think for themselves. By the end, average people in the streets are going nuts when they see his name go through the news feeds, or the feed sites, or the, you know, the marquees, right. Everywhere has a marquee in the damn series.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up feed sites and the, you know, because you look at the right now, I don't see people are getting their news from the main media sites now much anymore. I mean, it seems like people are more willing to go dig around in the internet and find things out for themselves, because, you know, there is such a lack of trust in media today. And that's kind of a foreshadowing if you think about it.
Yep. Well, I mean, if you look at it, there's already been a ruling that the media can lie to us in the news. It's legal for them to do so, to report factually false stories now. And, I mean, you know, there's no reason to trust the media at current, because a lot of them are lying assholes that are getting paid off by big interest groups. Media is shit, and through truth, you know, we will find something better. And I hope that we see the truth in our media coming here into the next, you know.
Well, look, one thing you can take a look at is see is that all the mainstream media is, and, you know, and despite what Fox will tell you, they're included in this. It's all run by six major corporations. Only six.
Yeah.
I mean, that should set off some red flags right there.
You would think, and yet people seem to think that it's perfectly fine.
I think the most disheartening thing about all that, though, is that people are so into their deeply held beliefs that it's hard to get people to shake the media, you know? Because for some people, as long as the media is telling them what they want to hear, they're perfectly fine, regardless of whether or not it's lies. So it's one of those, you know.
And I think that's because most people are sedentary. And I don't mean that in a literal sense. People don't like change. They don't like things around them breaking from what they're comfortable with. I mean, you just look around and see, you know, you have this, you notice that there's been a cycle in politics that's been in play, at least in the, you know, in this country. I don't know how it works in other countries, but there's been a cycle of one party in, one party out. And that's how it's been, you know, for well over two centuries. You know, and I think people are starting, you know, not everybody, obviously. Like I said, humans are sedentary and they don't like change. But I think there are people starting to wake up and say, you know, this isn't working. We need to think about, you know, changing the system. It's like, you know, it's always the same two people, you know, one promises, one fucks us over, the other promises to fix us, and then he fucks us over, and the guy that fucked us over before comes back and says, you know, I'm going to fix it now, but didn't you fuck us over before?
Right. Our political system's got issues, for sure.
Yeah, no shit.
But let's bring this back into the purveyance of the book.
True. Yeah. I mean, we're way off topic.
Very big political...
It's hard not to discuss politics with this book because it has so much political underpinnings.
Right. And it does. And, you know, now, it's been a while since I read, but wasn't, like, one of the revelations in the book that the guy that, you know, Spider had been fucking with for so long was actually the lesser of two evils?
Correct.
Right. With the guy who actually, you know, ends up winning the presidency being, you know, awful.
I hate to be, you know, one of those people that's, but you know, I look at that as, again, you know, another foreshadowing. You look at this country and you saw how the media was so despised George W. Bush so much, and you know, he did a lot of stupid shit. I'm not going to defend him. But then they bring in this they bring in their, you know, football star candidate, so to speak, the Hollywood star candidate, Obama. And what's he always doing? Smiling and tell us he's going to change things. He doesn't say what he's going to change. It's almost as if, you know, it was a foreshadowing for that. But you know, to that point, that's almost how every campaign works. Somebody smiles and is very vague about what they're going to do, and then they get in and they just do whatever the fuck. You know?
Right.
And I think, you know, I only think about it through Obama because of the way the media iconized him, and I will blame the media full-heartedly.
I can see where you're going. Well, mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of Obama's.
Well, I'm not a fan of any politician, so I'm not taking sides here.
Yeah, I'm not gonna say, you know, he fits the lesser of two evils or the worst of the two evils.
No, it's just an allegory. Yeah. I do remember that Obama did a hell of a lot of smiling when he was trying to get elected the first time.
Oh yeah, they all do. They all seem friendly and personable when you look at them, and they're
That's why I say it's just taken. It just seems like that's a point where it's taken to extremes, is all, and that kind of coincides with the time where the media was complacent, and where you see a very complacent media in transmetropolitan. And like I said, in my opinion, there's no such thing as a good politician. They're all self motivated. So I'm just. It just seems to be a situation that fits well. But you could say the same thing about Kennedy. I mean, I think you'd see there's a lot of allegory to Kennedy. You know what? Right, one of the major plot points is that the Smiler was screwing prostitutes, which is, could be welded an allegory with Kennedy screwing Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no. I think everybody can see that. If for no reason than the nothing other than the pillbox hat that his wife was supposed to be Jackie Onassis, or at least a
a stand-in for her.
A stand-in for her, yes, thank you.
Yeah, and I think they made that a very prominent point visually. Like, every time she was drawn, it was, you know, tight in, close on her head and shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And she always looked like a palette swap of Jackie O.
Right.
Except for, you know, a bit older. I think she was supposed to be late middle age, old age.
I mean, probably if you think about it, it's probably about the age a little before she died.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it's obviously there. You can go back and look through history and see, just about in every case, how the smiling politician that's promising us all, I'm going to make things better. And he never says how he's going to do it. And, you know, in the back of a lot of times, you look at the people. Like, you could say the same thing about Carter in a sense. Carter didn't like have the selfish motivations, but he smiled, he got on TV, and he said, I'm going to fix things. And he really didn't fix much of anything. In fact, he made a lot of things worse. Now, although he had a lot of help from the Congress, let's be fair.
As much as I love talking politics, he said with no sarcasm at all in his voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to talk about religion.
Okay, let's talk. That's another subject that pisses people off.
There's a quote in Transmet that in the city, every 18 seconds, a new religion is founded.
Yeah.
They have conventions.
Yes, yeah. Literal like hobby clubs at colleges. Like when you went to go find a club to be in college, the exact same thing of just religion after religion of pretty much anything you want to worship.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't. Warren Ellis doesn't pull his punches here. There's literally a church where the whole point is trepanation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically sticking an ice pick through your fucking skull.
Ugh.
To let the fucking pressures and humors out, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think one of my personal favorite religions, though, was re-Christianity.
Yeah.
Where they went back to the old beliefs of Christians, and Spider rolls up on some people, stoning some guy.
And that's kind of hilarious. If you look at Spider, he's got on the white-gray robe and the Jesus beard.
Yeah.
And he is literal, not literally, but figuratively speaking, he's throwing the money changers out of the temple. It's such an obviously illustrated allegory to that biblical event. You know.
It was awesome.
Yeah. I love. They had a church devoted to Kurt Cobain, instead of fucking crosses, they had little shotguns, dude.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
Oh shit! Yeah, no, that was one of my favorite moments, though, was just the whole throwing the fleecers out of the temple, as it were, but instead it's the convention center. And oh man, so many ridiculous religions.
Yeah, Warren, what's his name?
Warren Ellis.
He really knew what he was doing when he crafted this story. Warren Ellis, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and what was it? He kind of terrorizes religion in this story. It's so great. That I belong. I don't even belong to atheism. I am nothing. But every time he turned around, there was like a church holding up, hiding a pedophile, or in one case, a ring of pedophiles.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He threatens to, and at one point does take a quote shit the size of a birthday cake in the holy water.
Yeah.
Or on the altar, some shit like that.
You know, it's such, again, you know, it points out the allegory that religion really, you know, in its purest form, religion is about placing man in giving him a role in the universe. What it's become, however, over the years, it's become more of a way to control people. And it's more of telling them how to think, telling them how where to go, what to do.
Who to associate with.
Who to associate with, thank you, you know. And right. I think in a lot, I think he's making taking a lot of fair shots at the hypocrisy sure. of religion in general. And
sorry, Jamie, go ahead.
It's fine. No, it's fine. I was done.
All I was going to say is that as a Christian myself, like, my whole belief was always just like live and let live, you know, and you see that reflected in kind of Spider's, you know, way of thinking, you know, is it's just, you know, he's very anti-religion, more about treating people, you know, well, he treats them like shit, but he's an equal
opportunity. He treats them equally like shit.
Exactly. You know, I found that kind of fascinating, you know, with all these religious overtones and stuff, the character himself, you know, kind of he's kind of got the same philosophy I've always had in the sense that, like, you know, I don't let my, you know, religious beliefs fucking, you know, dictate who I can talk to or how I treat people and shit, you know, and there's a very strong message of that in the book. And, you know, it was something that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who, you know, say they align with, you know, what I believe in would be upset by, but I just found it fantastic, you know. I mean, you know, because, you know, that is the biggest issue with, you know, kind of like modern organized religion is just that it has become so antithetical to what it's supposed to, what it says it's about, you know, about peace and love and living the kind of life that, you know, you can be proud of and shit, and mm-hmm. It's just not it. It, you know, it's, you know, I'm sure we're one step away from stoning people, you know?
Yeah, that's already happening. Let's be honest, right. That's already happening.
Well, yeah, for sure.
The thing I look at is I take my cue on this from who I think is one of the greatest philosophers of our time, John Hughes. And in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, there's a line said by Ferris, I don't believe people. Oh God! I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, no problem. Paraphrase.
You know, not that I condone fascism, or any ism for that matter. Isms as a whole are not good. A person shouldn't believe in an ism. He should just believe in himself. I quote sure. John Lennon: "I don't believe in Beatles. I just believe in me." Good point there. After all, he was the Walrus. I could be the Walrus. I'd still have to bum rides off people. But that's a philosophy that's really stuck with me throughout my life, because I think that you really have to be yourself. You really can't, you know, if you let people tell you how to think, tell you what to do, I mean, I understand that some people want guidance, but there's sure. guidance and there's control.
Right.
And, you know, and you're starting to see the religious the religious control mindset coming out in secular society now, in ways. And my opinion is, if you need someone else to define you, you have a right. huge problem. That's what I think.
And I always thought I'm probably the worst Christian on earth because I don't condemn, you know, other people. You know, for their choice of lifestyle or whatever.
But no, that's not true. That, in my opinion, is not true. Because what has always been one of the fundamentals of Christianity has always been love thy neighbor, God,
right.
And judgment is mine, saith the Lord. It's not your in Christian dogma. It's not man's place to judge.
Yeah, exactly.
It's God's place. At some point in the line. And this is to be expected with a religion that's been translated and mistranslated over two millennia. Right. It became so somewhere at some point where a man decided he was speaking on behalf of God.
Right.
And, you know, that's just wrong.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we see that reflected in the book. I mean, in obvious ways.
Mm-hmm.
And less obvious ways, you know, in the way the character of Spider Jerusalem carries himself right. and his ethics and shit. And it's... You know, so,
and you know, there's that one scene, the one chapter where Spider's going around talking to people and just getting their opinions on things, and has one guy talking about how he's a good religious person because he wants to stamp out homosexuality or any kind of transient behavior, and transient in the classic term being not falling in line. Right. And it's like, this is the man speaking on behalf of God, and like, who has given him that power to do that? And it's just, and that's just not how it's supposed to be. And especially, you know, one thing that often gets argued in the argument over LGBT and religion is, in fact, that one biblical passage, 1 Corinthians 6:9-10, which states that you shall not lie with other men. But there's also, that not even all religious scholars agree of the meaning, because there's a lot of discourse that says, how do we know Jesus isn't talking about prostitutes?
Right.
And there's also some ancient wording that it's easily translated from ancient Greek. So, you know, the church is allowing man to interpret what is supposed to be the word of God.
Right.
And they're misinterpreting it. And in some cases, I think they're knowingly misinterpreting it just for their own...
Well, pushing their own agendas.
Because it works for our own agenda.
Okay, right. Before we get too heavy-handed here,
I'm sorry.
Let's go into another really big theme of the book, future tech.
Wow.
Like, let's start at the very basics. The very basics. The bowel disruptor. Three settings. Common. Three settings, though.
I'm pretty sure there's somebody following me around with one.
Okay. Loose, watery, and prolapse. I mean, that just sums up the mindset.
By the end of the book, he has settings like fatal prolapse or something like that.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the replicator because I'm pretty sure at one point it has a drug dependency, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
The makers, which are basically replicators from Star Trek, use a base block or garbage to rearrange molecules, et cetera, et cetera, to create basically whatever you want. And some of them, well, they all have an AI.
Mm-hmm.
And the AI is usually mafia-based because they come from a company called Gotti.
Yeah,
Gotti.
Some of them wind up learning how to make their own drugs.
Yeah.
And make their own cyber drugs.
Yeah, so you've got AI hopped up on whatever the hell that stuff is.
Yeah.
But by the way, really quick, in case you don't know, Gotti is a reference to the infamous monster John Gotti. Google it.
I think one of my favorite parts, though, is that later on, throughout the art, you see makers that are advertised as drug-free models.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Eye pollen. That was a cool tech.
Eye pollen is really cool.
Informational pollen. Basically, bits of info that you, if you inhale them or get them on your skin, seep in and basically flash information to your brain.
Right.
Blurses.
Which isn't that what causes
the degenerative neurological disease?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's implied, but then the last panel's
he's either or one of the one percent that.
Let's not discuss the ending. Let's give the viewers something. But we'll talk about it after the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But what other tech is there? Oh, there's that God. One guy
blur
who
suits.
Blur suits. Yes.
Doesn't he like? Doesn't the guy like become energy at one point? Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, he
gives up his body and
he doesn't become energy. Right. He becomes nano machine.
Becomes nano.
Right,
nano
cloud,
basically.
Right.
Yeah, foglets. Those fuckers.
Wasn't that what's her name's ex?
Shannon's ex at the beginning.
He turned into a foglet,
and the first thing he did was fuck another foglet.
Yep.
Yeah. right in front of her as she's there watching him transition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like, are they fucking?
I think one of the more interesting aspects is the. They're living in a time where man has harnessed the atom in so many ways that not literally can he reconstruct inanimate objects or rearrange them. He can construct himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw the pills that will destroy a corpse and leave no evidence of it, of anything. And it's to the point where you had they were building meat out of corpses, and they were building headless hookers for rich businessmen.
Now, hold on. On this tech note, there's one certain issue that's heartbreaking that I got to bring up. Mm-hmm. They have the technology to bring back cryogenically frozen heads.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yes. Yeah.
And
the
great storyline.
Yeah.
Mary angle, yeah.
I remember that.
That was fucking just heart-wrenching.
It was heart-wrenching, but it had a happy ending, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, she help bring the president down.
That's the whole thing, is that, you know, they show Mary's story, and she lived through the turbulent 60s and was a photographer, and they bring her back, and they place her in a hostel for because they don't know what to do with these people, so they just toss them into these hostels, and they just kind of go nuts.
Yeah, because the people that would have their heads frozen now would have a definite future shock.
Mm-hmm.
The world would be pretty much unrecognizable to them.
Yeah, but then Spider gives her her camera.
Backstory.
Yeah.
And then Spider gives her the camera, and then she just basically finds her way again because of that. Man.
And it was the very same camera she used that took the picture of the president with the hooker.
Uh-huh.
Or, no, it wasn't the hooker. It was
The guy who killed Vita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fucked up.
Oh, yeah. I think that's one thing that you can look at this guy, the Smiler, and say, this guy is a set. You know, on the villain scale, he's pretty nasty. I mean, he's like Palpatine nasty. I mean, this is a guy who literally will kill anyone just to get ahead. Even if he did. And I don't mean that in a direct sense. I mean, he'll kill people that are close to him if he thinks he can get it. It will help him get somewhere. It's sick.
When I think of the Smiler, there's one panel that sticks out in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's him in the Oval Office behind his desk, jerking off into the flag.
Oh, God.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't even remember that, man.
I do.
He gets a phone call.
They don't explicitly show it, though.
No, they just show the flag going into his crotch, and he's, like, grunting kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's another scene later where he's pulling the legs off a spider.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest. We know what he's doing there.
Right. Oh, man. You know what? This conversation is just reminding me of how much fun I had reading it. I got to say.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's just been a while. I got to go back and read it again after we're done here.
No.
It, like Preacher, is one of those books that you have to experience.
It's like iZombie. It's one of those stories that grabs you and doesn't let go.
And Spider is just such a fascinating fucking character, because for all his assholishness, he is a man who's deeply, deeply ethical, you know?
Yeah, deeply ethical and deeply moral.
Right. And you know?
I'm going to say something crazy here.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I liked this better than I liked The Invisibles, and I loved The Invisibles a fucking... Yeah. This was way better. This felt more correct in the way that it delivered the story. It felt like it was the right length as well. Invisibles felt a little rushed, although that's kind of due to the fact that it had to end at a certain time and everything. But it just... This was given the brevity it needed to say everything it needed to say. And it does so in a way that it doesn't hold any punches. It's right there in your face with everything. And it's just so great, because the character Spider, you know, he's relatable, and at the same time, he's almost this sort of crazy whirlwind of just insanity. I love that about him.
One thing I noticed about Spider is when you start reading the book, you kind of can get the feeling that he's kind of a nihilist.
Yeah,
but the longer you go in, you long to see that this guy is more so morally grounded. That just doesn't apply to him, because if he was truly a nihilist, he just wouldn't give a shit.
Right.
You know, he let the chips fall where he may. But he has one fucking, you know, you talk about religion. The one thing that he is devoted to is the truth, absolutely and totally the truth, 100% of the time. Don't fucking bullshit people.
And he does care.
Yeah, I'm gonna hand you the truth, and you know I'm not gonna play punches. I'm not gonna play bullshit games. Here it is, right there.
Yep. Whether you like it or not, it's for for your own good. And that's the thing, you know. I mean, you get a sense, especially when the stuff was going down with the what were they called? I keep wanting to call them mutants, but that wasn't what they
transients.
Were.
Transients.
Transients. You know, like when he was watching the massacre and the police just standing there doing nothing and shit, you could tell the guy cared. He, you know, like he wasn't there writing about it just, you know, for it, none of this clickbait kind of bullshit. He cared. He cared about what was going on and he wanted people to know the truth about it. You know, and that's a quality you don't see anymore in real life here, you know.
Especially in media. That's almost dead in media these days.
Yeah. They don't chase a story because they care about bringing the public the truth.
No, it's all about baiting those clicks.
Yeah. Or getting those the advertising dollars from, you know, from views and shit. You know, just, it's become...
Quote Jimmy from South Park, that's Ned.
Yeah, it's just become all about the money, and you know, and that's one of the most fascinating things about Spider, though, is like for all his curmudgeonly, you know, bullshit, you know, he genuinely cares not just about the truth, but about the people that he's serving it to, and he doesn't. I mean, you know, and then you see the flip side of that where he's got very very strong opinions about certain types of people, but.
Another thing I find interesting about the character is, you know, in that regard, is that he seems more comfortable in meager surroundings. I don't think it seemed like he didn't like being in the opulence.
Right.
You know, he complains that he couldn't see the street from his penthouse apartment. And it seems like he just likes to go out and be among the people. You know, because that's where the story is.
Yeah,
amen.
He wants to be with the common people because that's the only people they need him as much as he needs them.
Right,
and he does need them too. I mean, yeah. You know, a large part of that is, you know, that what motivates him is that need to you know, doesn't he? Wait, I could be mistaken. I'm sorry. I vaguely remember him kind of having a need to be needed.
Yeah, he does.
Kind of, yeah.
Right. It wasn't very prevalent, but it was there, you know? And, you know. But yeah,
the problem is he needs to be needed on his terms.
Right, that's right. The important thing.
Now, yeah. I'm going to say this. Transmet is one of two comics that have shaped my entire philosophy on life. There are two things I believe in to the utmost, and that, Daryl, you should know this one.
Yeah.
You gotta be a good guy, because there's too many of the bad.
Yeah.
And the truth at all fucking costs.
Right.
And I think... I really think that Vertigo has this... habit of publishing these stories that really speak to the core of the human condition. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like this and The Preacher, you know, and Preacher were two stories that really kind of, like, you know, fucking made a mark on me, because, you know, in Preacher, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point in the future.
Oh, yeah, it's an upcoming episode.
You know, Custer, Jesse is a very flawed, but... you know, character, but he's got, you know, integrity for days in his own way and shit, you know, and that's what Spider too, you know, and more than just the societal commentary, you know, it speaks to, these comics really kind of speak to what it is to be a good person, even in the face of bad things, you know, and that's what's just, you know, struck me about, you know, about Transmit and Preacher, you know, just they're stories that you can fucking, you can find a little bit of yourself in, you know, if you look.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, one thing I found really interesting is there are some chapters that where the reading is really heavy, and, you know, it kind of, stumbles the pace of it, but until you get further on and you see how important that diatribe was, how important Spider trying to soliloquy his thoughts to say, because you go back to, as you move forward, you go back to that and say, wow, well, that just kind of displays, gives you more of an insight into his feelings. Even though it kind of feels a little slow, it helps the plot so much that you need it to be slow.
Right. There's a lot of character building shit in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've gone on about Spider, you know, and he's not the only character in the book that's well fleshed out, you know.
Right.
But he's just so fascinating that it's hard not to gush over him, you know?
Yeah, he really does steal the show, well, even though it's his own show.
You know what's kind of interesting, though, is Spider sort of wanders into the whole story fully formed as a character. He's already where he needs to be in terms of development, and it's not so much about his development in the story, but the other sub-characters and the city's development itself and the events and so forth. Normally when you see a story like this, you have the character grow and change in some way.
Right.
And yet when it comes to this, Spider doesn't change at all. Spider's already there at the end of his whole development arc. So you get, you know, this interesting look at how the rest of a world sort of matures around a character in the same way that a character should mature in a normal story arc. It's
so
a very interesting literary device.
He becomes more like a player in his own story, you know, that he's there to drive other people's experiences around him.
Exactly.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's,
yeah.
I don't know. Are we allowed to spoil the ending at all?
Go for it.
Okay, because, you know, he is at the end of the book. He is at the end of his life, and he is passing the torch to Elena, who's going to be the next Spider, so to speak. She's going to be the one who takes up his crusade of banging out the truth and giving it to everyone, no holds barred.
Right.
You know.
Hey, now this is a guy who did social justice right. You know, in the sense that, like, you know, he went out there and fought and, you know, and fucking, yeah.
He actually got up off his ass and did something.
Yeah. Yep. Well, it's certainly a lot more than most people who nowadays just engage what I like to call hashtag activism.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of sad to see. I think one, you know, it is one thing that we mentioned is how the humanities become so reliant on technology. I think that's one big thing that we see nowadays is, like, people think they're actually doing something by hashtagging a tweet where they say, oh, look at this, and I'm pointing out how horrible this is, and I'm actually they're actually doing something about it. No, that's, as far as I'm concerned, you're not doing shit.
No, you're not. I agree. Well, alright, we're coming to the end of this, and if it's alright, I gotta get up in my soapbox and share a quote for a minute.
Yeah, Go for it, we've all been doing it.
Yeah. Everybody, with all the shit that's going on in the world, there's one quote you need to understand, and it's from Spider himself. You want to know about voting? I'm here to tell you about voting. Imagine you're locked in a huge underground nightclub filled with sinners, whores, freaks, and unnameable things that rape pit bulls for fun, and you ain't allowed out until you vote on what you're going to do tonight. You'd like to put your feet up and watch Republican Party reservation. They like to have sex with normal people using knives, guns, and brand new sexual organs that you did not know existed. So, you vote for television. Everyone else, as far as the eye can see, votes to fuck you with switchblades. That's voting. You're welcome.
Yeah, that's actually a reference to a quote that Larry Flint made.
Yep.
Where he said, democracy is five wolves and one sheep deciding what to have for dinner.
Yep.
I don't know how, I don't know how much I agree with that. I like to think that it's not that way, but that's the problem is I become so jaded with voting that I'm starting to see what he's talking about.
Right.
Now, that said, I'd like to close this with my little soapbox.
Okay.
I do have one thing I want to say to the listeners, if I may.
Go ahead.
If the current climate, you know, of media and shit pisses you off, please pick up this book. And if you just like a good story, pick up this book, you know.
Absolutely.
But
I am going to say read this before you read The Invisibles. Although if you read The Invisibles after I told you to read The Invisibles, then read this next.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just want to close out by saying we've been talking a lot about the truth and the truth at any cost. With all the major political decisions that are being made recently, like Brexit, the upcoming elections, do your research. Find the truth. And I don't say go to your NBC, CNBC, MSNBC, CNN, Fox, etc.
Because
they've all got corporate masters.
And they're only going to give you half the story, if that.
Find the truth. Find somebody that actually gives a fuck about what is going on enough to bleed and die for it. And follow them as close as you fucking can.
And do it even if it means coming out of your comfort zone, people.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is fucking scary. Finding it is scary as shit. And it'll change you. Yep, but it'll change you for the better. So please, question what you see and hear and find the truth for yourself.
Yeah.
That said, thank you all for listening.
Well,
hope to see you next time.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Yo.